So I'm going to move really fast. I understand that I'm pretty sure that I took quite a bit more time a minute ago than you've been doing recently. Huh? That's good. It's good. I'm glad about it, too. But I also know that John has been trying to keep things shorter this summer. So, and those of you who have been here before when I've been here know that, well, that could be difficult. So, anyway, so just a little background on this story. I'm sure that you know Jacob's story. And so I'm going to just kind of blow through that really quickly. Jacob is a twin, the second born of the two twins. But from birth, this guy is trying to get ahead of everybody. Even when he's born, Esau, his brother, who is being birthed first, Jacob's got a hold of his heel. He's trying to hold this dude back. He wants to be first. And he is a guy who goes through his whole life kind of scamming a little bit. His name actually means deceiver or usurper. Deceiver is probably the better idea there. But so that's what he's like. And he's always sort of scamming, looking for an angle, trying to get to be first. And so eventually, as they're growing up, Isaac, their father, is about to die. And Jacob's mom likes him better than Esau. So she helps Jacob trick their father. He tricks their father into getting what is not rightfully his. In Hebrew culture, the firstborn son got the father's blessing and the bulk of the inheritance and all of this sort of thing. And so when the time is coming, because Esau is about to pass, Jacob's mom helps him trick their dad into him getting the firstborn's rightful stuff. The blessing and the inheritance of all of that. And of course, Jacob comes to get that from his father rightly and finds out it's already been given. And you can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. You just can't get it back in there. Esau is really angry, and he's so angry, he wants to kill his brother. So Jacob, again with the help of his mother, gets out of Dodge. He takes off, and he runs away for 20 years. And 20 years he runs away. He knows his brother wants to kill him. I think probably at first he didn't expect to ever be able to go back home. Not that he didn't want to, maybe, but he didn't expect to ever be able to go back home. And eventually, he hooks up with another family, the head of which is named Laban. And Laban's got some daughters. And Jacob, they meet and they talk and they kind of like each other. And Laban invites him to sort of be part of their household and their family working and their farm and all this other stuff. And Jacob agrees to that, but he says, you know what I'd really like is, I kind of like Rachel. And I'd like to marry her. So Laban thinks about that for a little bit, and he says, I'll tell you what, you work for me 7 years, and you can have her. And so Jacob goes through the 7 years working for her, and the wedding day comes finally at the end of all of that. And Laban sends the person who's supposed to be Rachel in the night to Jacob, and he wakes up in the morning, and he finds himself next to the older sister, Leah. Much to his chagrin. And Jacob has been deceived by Laban. For 7 years he's been deceived. Laban's gotten 7 years of work out of this guy to be able to marry the wrong girl. So he's getting some of his own medicine back. And Jacob goes to him and says, hey, you know, this wasn't the deal we made. And Laban said, sorry, but you should know the older daughter has to get married first. So if you want Rachel, you're going to have to work for me another 7 years. So Jacob does that. And eventually, what's that? Yeah, it's another 7 years. And after 7 years, then he gets to marry Rachel. And she's the one that he prefers. But then, much to his chagrin, Rachel is not fertile and Leah is. And so he's having children by Leah. And she's going na-na-na-na-na to Rachel. And Jacob is just, there's all this angst in the whole situation, right? And so then Jacob wants to leave. They start having children with Leah. Rachel is infertile. And he wants to get out of there. He's ready to just kind of go to his own life. He's had enough of this Laban dude and the being tricked and all that kind of stuff. And Laban says, well, you know, you don't really have enough stuff to live on your own yet. So I'll tell you what, you keep working for me for another 6 years. And then you can acquire, you can just build your own herds and servants and this whole thing. So when you go out on your own, you'll be all set up. Your whole household will be all set up. You'll have everything you're going to need. And so Jacob agrees to that, but then Laban tricks him again and he says, well, here's the part of the herds that you're going to get for your work. It's going to be all the striped and speckled and spotted ones. And Jacob's looking at the herd, and those are the ones, first of all, they're rare and nobody really wants them because they're not. So he's tricked by Laban about that. But then Jacob pricks back again because he's still the same old dude. He's still the deceiver. And so he's going to figure out how he's going to get what he wants, as he's been doing all along, even in the face of Laban's own trickery. And so he does stuff like carve bark off of trees and all this stuff. And then suddenly all these livestock are becoming speckled and spotted and striped. And Jacob gets just immensely wealthy with all this livestock, and he's got servants now, and he's got children, and this whole entourage. And finally, he says to Laban, you know what, you can't keep me here anymore, and I'm gone. The 6 years are up, 20 years total, and he's going to head back. And he knows that he's got to go back home at this point. And I know you talked about Jacob a couple of weeks ago at Bethel. But this is now a little further down the road, and he knows that he's got to go back home, but he is afraid because he knows who he is. One thing about it, most of us know who we really are. Now with one another, like when we come to church on our Sunday best and all that, and we shake hands and pat backs and say, how are you? And we all lie and say we're blessed. Even when it's not true. Jacob is that sort of dude. He's posturing and he's pretending and all this sort of stuff. But he knows who he really is. He knows that at the core of himself, he's a deceiver. That from day one, he was always trying to scam his way to be first in line. To get what wasn't rightfully his. To get ahead at somebody else's expense. He knows who he really is. And so he's heading back home with this massive entourage of livestock and servants and wives and children and all this stuff. And he's getting closer and closer to home, and his nerve level is rising. It's escalating as he gets closer and closer. So he begins to scheme because he knows he's going to run into Esau at some point, and he thinks that Esau still wants to kill him for what he did. And he knows he deserves it. That's part of why he thinks Esau still wants to kill him, because he knows he deserves it. So he starts formulating a plan. And he sends herds of livestock, separate ones, out of this massive single herd. He's sending smaller herds ahead of him. And he's got some servants with each herd. And when he gives them instructions. When you come across Esau, tell him this is a gift from your brother Jacob. And he's somewhere back there. And he's sending all these gifts, and he's thinking, I'm going to butter him up, and I'm going to try to soften his heart. Maybe he won't kill me. But he's sending all the livestock and everything ahead to try to do this, to get out of what he's got coming to them. Then he comes to this moment that I think is gut-wrenching to me. And it shows who he really is. And he must have been deeply, profoundly aware of this, of the wrongness of this. It wasn't enough for him to have just sent his herds ahead in an attempt to buy off his brother's anger. Jacob actually sends his wives and his children ahead of him. You think about what that means. He thinks Esau is going to get word that Jacob is coming back home and is going to be lying in wait to ambush him, to kill him, to wipe him out. And this dude sends his wives and kids ahead of him. He's got herds up there. He's got servants up there. He's got wives and children ahead of him. Hedging his bets so that if Esau actually does attack, he can get out. It's shocking, isn't it? But see, Jacob knows that this is who he is, and nothing has changed yet, and he's painfully aware that he's still the same guy, and he still deserves the same fate. And so in the middle of the night, Jacob has his dark night of the soul, and he wrestles with God. This becomes clear at the end of the passage. This was God he was wrestling with. And this wrestling match went all night long. Think about that for a second. Did any of you ever wrestle like in high school or college? You know, you got 3 2-minute periods, right? And it's grueling. That doesn't sound 6 minutes and you get a break every two. It doesn't sound that bad. It is grueling. Am I right? It is grueling. And you are spent by the end of the match. This was all night long. Wrestling. And when dawn begins to break, God speaks to Jacob and says, you know what? It's morning now. Just let me go. It's time to let go. Come back and fight another day. He says, it's morning. Let me go. And Jacob says, nope, I am not going to let you go until you bless me. And so God dislocates his hip. That's a lot of pain. Anybody ever had a dislocated hip? Anybody ever had a hip replacement? Probably feels a little like that. I mean, it's a lot of pain, and still he's hanging on. And God says, let me go. And Jacob says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. So God says, okay, what's your name? Like he doesn't know. Right? God says, what's your name? Like he doesn't actually know. He wants Jacob to say it. He wants Jacob to admit who he is and what he's like. And he says, Jacob, the deceiver. He doesn't say this, but this is what the name means. Deceiver. He was given the name because he tried to deceive people and be born first. It's who he is. Jacob. And God says, you know what? From now on, you are not going to be called Jacob. You're going to be Israel. Because you have wrestled with God and with humans, and you've overcome. Now let me ask you a question. How many humans were there? There was only one there that night. That long, dark, painful, agonizing night. It was himself. Jacob wrestled through the night with God and with himself, with who he was, with who he knew that he was, what he'd been like, what he deserved. It was Jacob wrestling in his own soul. It's the dark night of the soul. He's wrestling with God. He's wrestling with himself. This was the humanity. And God says, you overcame. Hanging on through this pain, through this agony, through your humiliation, through your embarrassment, through what you know to be yourself, through what you know you wish, or through what you wish was not true about you, you've hung on to that, you've overcome, you've stuck it out all through the night, and you're going to be called a different name now. You're going to be called an overcomer. Jacob had lived his whole life with a limp. It was the limp that came from being a deceiver, a conniver, a dishonest man. And it had hampered him at every turn. It hampered him in getting married and in making a living and in his family life at home before he ever left. Jacob had walked with a limp his whole life, but that limp left him that moment. He walked the rest of his life with a limp due to the dislocated hip. But the first limp, the one he'd lived his whole life with, was gone in that moment. When God said, you're not that man anymore. You're a different human being. It's interesting that the next day was the day that Jacob met Esau. And you know how he went to Esau that day? He went first. He went first. That's a different man. That's a 180-degree turn. That's a whole different soul at work there. He went first. And if something was going to happen, okay. Better it happen to me than to my wives and my kids, and my servants, and anybody else with me. He was a different man. Something had broken during that night in him. 1996, I finally stopped my running from God and began to pursue wholeheartedly His calling on my life in a new way. I'm the son and grandson of pastors, and I knew way too much about it to ever want to be one. Like, it's not something you just want to do. It's not a good idea. But, you know, if you can't do anything else, well, what else are you going to do? And so I began to pursue that, and I met with a church in Ironton, Ohio, and intended to go there to become its new pastor. They intended that to happen. The meeting and the interview and all that stuff there went just extremely well. I knew it went really well. But within an hour after that, my wife confronted me about some things that were true about me that I kept hidden. They were part of my Jacobness. Things that I had done over the years to harm our marriage and our family and our life together that I had been able to just sort of move on from. And that whole arrangement, I made the contact, and honestly, I was crushed. I was a really busted up guy that night, late in the night, drove my family home 3.5 hours in the middle of the night, then drove back down again the next day to say that I was not going to be coming there. It just wasn't right for me to do. But you know what happened that was really disturbing? About 2 weeks later, I found that I bounced back. Kind of like Jacob. I figured out how to make everything striped and speckled and spotted so that I could just sort of move on with my life so things were normal, as though I were just okay. And for the first time in my life, it scared me deep to the core of my soul. And I thought, what is wrong with me that I can't stay broken, that I keep recovering and becoming the same old cocky, pretentious, deceptive Steve? What's wrong with me? And I was scared. My mom, for some time, had been trying to convince me to do this retreat experience called the Walk to Emmaus. And in February, just a few months, about 3 months later, I was able to do one. And I went to that experience specifically asking God to break me in such a way that I would never recover. I told the spiritual director on that retreat those exact words. My goal this weekend is to be broken in such a way that I will never recover. And during the course of that weekend, there is this one really huge, wonderful, beautiful moment that I just was so overwhelmed by the love of God towards me and His grace and mercy and acceptance of me. I remember thinking things like, it is not right that you should love me like this. I'm pretty sure that's the way Jacob felt. I would bet on that. I remember thinking, if this doesn't stop, I'm going to die. It was so overwhelming, this sense. It was like being in the middle of a tornado comprised of nothing but the love of God, the passionate love of God. And it undid me. And in that moment, I heard God speak deep in my soul. And He said, Steve, you do not need to be broken. He said, you need to stop pretending that you're not. You need to stop pretending that you're not broken. It's kind of what Jacob faced in that dark night. Stop pretending, Jacob, that you're not broken, that you're not who you are. Face it. Be real about it. Wrestle with me about it. Overcome yourself, your grief, your sorrow, your embarrassment, your conniving. Overcome this stuff. Hang on through all of it. And on the other end, you'll come out an overcomer. Your name will change. Who you are will change. The next day, Jacob went first. the second chapter of the book of Revelation, in the letter to the church at Pergamum, at the very end, all of those letters to the seven churches end with a statement about people who overcome. The one to the letter to the church at Pergamum, he says, Jesus says, to him who overcomes, or her, you understand that? To the person who overcomes, I will give a white stone with a new name written on it, known only to him who receives it. God shows up in the strangest places. Jacob called this place Peniel. And he met God, that he had this wrestling match with God and himself. And at the end of that dark night, God gave him a new name. And I want to tell you that in your life and in mine, God is at work in the dark place, in the recesses of our souls where nobody else ever really gets to see, where we get to hide and pretend and dress it up and make it up and all of that. But it comes out sometimes, and we know it all too well. In that dark place, God is at work, and He's doing something that none of us could ever accomplish on our own. He's meeting us in the dark place in order to create a new person. Somebody whose name is changed, not just like by going down to the courthouse, but in character. The character of each one of us is changed in the dark place. And when it's all over, because we can't feel it happening, we can't see it happening, we don't know what it's all about. Jacob didn't know what this was going to be about. All he knew was he had to have this something that he couldn't define, and he was willing to hang on through anything. And on the other end of the dark night, God gave him a new name. And he does the same with each one of us. It's a promise. It's coming. That when we can't see what God is doing, he's going to give us, I don't know what this is really like. It's a metaphor. A white stone with a new name written on it that reflects what God has done in us in the dark place. That reflects the new character that He's developed in us as we have wrestled through who we have been and become who He is making us in the night. I don't know what your name's going to be. Don't know what mine will. I just know that God is meeting me there, and He's meeting you there too. And the other end of it is deeply, profoundly, beautifully